But now, as promised, we're going to talk tech. Fevzi Turkalp joins us, the editor of GadgetDetective.com and the Gadget Detective podcast. We'll get on to broadband in a bit, but first of all, the news that social media companies are facing a legal reckoning over mental health harms and accusations of addiction. Fevzi, what more can you tell us?
Sure. So this is a trial taking place in California. It's one trial, but it's one of about 22 bellwether trials that are being used with thousands of other trials waiting in the wings. So they're doing these 22 cases to see how juries will react to different claims of harm, different profiles of complainants, different types of litigants. So some of the cases are, this case is being brought by, I believe, a 20-year-old woman who was a child when the alleged harms were done. Other cases are being brought by school districts and even states. So there's going to be thousands of these if this first 22 shows signs of success. There'll be thousands of these. So the allegation here is that the use of social media harmed the mental health of this young woman when she was younger, and that these harms were not... So what's interesting about this case is they're not saying that the videos that she watched were harmful in and of themselves. They're saying that the social media platforms actually took steps that led to the harm. And the reason why that's important is there's something called Section 230 protections in the USA. And in Europe and UK, it's called safe harbor legislation. And what it means is that social media platforms are largely protected from claims of harm against the content because they're seen as purveyors of the content but not the originators of it. But here, these cases are clever. They go all the way around those sorts of protections, and they say, no, the companies themselves are doing things or have done things, the allegation goes, that are harmful, so they've designed it to be addictive, infinite scroll, no stopping cues, algorithmic ranking, the way that it pushes people to do more, to have more and more of something that in the end leads to possibly, well, arguably addiction. Things like variable rewards, so you don't know what you're going to get. You can get a like, a nice comment, something funny. It's they've turned it into arguably something that's more like a slot machine.
Yeah.
With the buzz that it gives you every time you
pull. But that is true of almost all the apps that I use. I mean, even I'm trying to improve my French with Duolingo, and it's all gamified. You know, you press the thing win a point, you might win three. It is just like a slot machine. It seems to be almost the whole basis of these applications.
Yes, and that's true because, I mean, there have been interviews in the past that I've seen where people who design the actual operating systems that run on phones have actually talked about how they used social scientists and psychologists when they were designing these to, for example, when you offer someone, let's say you've got a freemium game, you know, a game that's ostensibly free to play, but then you're tempted into buying a pot of gold at a particular time. They work out exactly when a person is most psychologically vulnerable to buying that pot of gold or coins or whatever it is, or the special shield or the sword or whatever it is. So they work it out, and they, you know, the argument is that they take advantage of our human weaknesses in this way. So, but as I say, it's interesting because they can't use Section 230 protections because the allegation isn't about the content. It's about the specific behavior of these companies.
Right.
It is interesting that TikTok and Snap, who own Snapchat, settled this case rather than go to court. And I've been thinking about why they would have done that because there's going to be thousands of these cases. I think that part of it is not just the risk of losing, which is always present even when you think you're in the right. It's also the risk of discovery. All the documents that they're going to hand over, all the things that they knew and carried on with, for example, you know, the allegation that they've done. A lot of these companies do a lot of A/B testing. They do a lot of internal studies. There are allegations. I couldn't comment, but there are allegations that, you know, sometimes when they've found harms, they've buried the study. So This will be a very interesting one. As I say, one of about 22 bellwether cases being brought in the States at the moment. I think we're going to see thousands of these, and I think that the financial weight of these cases will start to put pressure on the companies to make at least some sorts of changes.
The real
harm is in the algorithm. I mean, that's what has to be focused on.
Absolutely. Now, meanwhile, tech firms here will have, this is a new law, 48 hours to remove abusive images.
Yes. So to be clear, that's 48 hours from when they're reported. I've noticed a lot of the reporting hasn't actually mentioned that. It's not 48 hours of them appearing, but it's when someone complains about it. And, you know, there's clearly a case for removing a lot of content as quickly as possible. Things like revenge porn, upskirting, deep fake sexual imagery, all those things have no place, you know, and should be, really, they should find a way of stopping them being posted in the first place, but as a minimum, remove them quickly. That's reasonable. What I worry about is that this may have unintended or even intended consequences, that there's a risk of weaponized complaints to suppress lawful reporting, suppression of investigative journalism, politicians or public figures using complaints tactically. And sometimes disclosures are in the public interest. For example, if photos appeared of someone involved in the Epstein case, for example, I would say you could make an argument that the exposure of those images is in the public interest. And what you don't want is a powerful person using a law like this to keep it under wraps, or at least to try to do so. You know, there are people that use litigation in that way. The other thing is that, you know, some types of images are maybe embarrassing to somebody, but maybe completely appropriate. For example, there's no expectation of privacy in public. If a picture or a video is in public, then you know, that shouldn't be taken down necessarily. And the problem is that when you reduce the time frame to 48 hours, and then you say to the social media companies, you know, you can be fined up to 10% of your global turnover, then it's going to have a very chilling effect. Anything that's challenged will be taken down. And I don't even know if it's a matter of, you know, take it down first, investigate later. I suspect they'll never investigate it, and some things just won't see the light of day. So there's that problem. And then there's the problem of, if you really do have a bad actor, they could post this repeatedly, or variations of it repeatedly, across different social media platforms. It's going to be very hard to keep a lid on it if someone is persistent and has, you know, basic technical knowledge.
Now, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about this morning as well, I know that you're going through a broadband change where you are, and you've been trying out this mobile broadband from home where you don't have to have a wired-in connection. You just pick it up over the airwaves. Yes. I've tried that as well. So what's your experience?
So it's quite an interesting thing. I mean, mobile broadband is where you use your SIM card to generate an internet signal within your home, typically. And the simplest incarnation of that is simply using your mobile phone and turning it into a Wi-Fi hotspot. So data comes in via the cellular network and then is spread around using Wi-Fi. Now, that's fine. That's the most basic way that you can do it. And that works, you know, quite well in limited ways. But if you've got a home that you need to spread the internet around, if you need wired connections as well as Wi-Fi, that's not going to be enough. So what I've done recently is I bought myself a new router, which takes a SIM card. So you actually pop a little nano SIM into it. So again, in comes the mobile data, and then it spreads it either through Wi-Fi or through a set of Ethernet connections, which are the wired internet connectors that we use. The first benefit of that is that these things have got separate antennas. So instead of having a little antenna either inside the phone or a piece of foil wrapped around the edge as you hold it, attenuates the signal, you've now got proper aerials. You can even if you're in a poor reception area, you can even have an external aerial and then bring the cable in and plug it in. That's the first thing, so you can get a much better grabbing of the signal. The second thing is you can be much more flexible with where you place it, because it's not a mobile phone that you have to hand and hold above your head in a particular location. And when I was doing this testing, I found that I had speeds between 20 megabits per second and over 200 on the same SIM and the same machine, just by changing the location.
And that's quite fast, isn't it, for a broadband signal?
And it's 4G.
Right.
Can you believe
it? Right.
Well, no, I beg your pardon, that one was 5G, but still, it is very fast, and it also had a reasonable up speed as well. So the other, you can even get an app. You can do trial and error, but just by putting the router in different locations and different orientations as well. Just the direction, what you want to be doing is pointing at the nearest cell tower for your network, essentially. And there are apps that help you define that, or you can just do trial and error with it as it is. So you get this thing in an optimal position, then you run an Ethernet cable, you typically into a router. Now, what I then did was I thought, well, okay, so I've got this really good signal coming in, but now what am I going to do with it? How am I going to get it to all parts of my palatial home? And the way that I've done that is the router I used was from TP-Link. It's called an Archer MR600. The SIM card happens to be O2, but you just need to work out what gives the strongest signal in your area. And don't forget, you typically get 14 days remorse period, so if it doesn't work for you, you can try a different SIM. I then used a TP-Link setup of a mesh network. So these are Wi-Fi 7 nodes, three of them. So the cable comes into one of them, and then it spreads the internet around the home. Now, you can either spread it using wireless, or if your home's got very thick walls or there's a lot of interference. I also used, in parts, I used units by a company called Devolo, which is a German company, and they do these power line adapters. So you plug a pair of them into the wall sockets, the electrical wall sockets in your home. The internet goes in through one of them, travels through the mains wiring, and pops out at the other end. So I've used a combination of that and wireless to cover really quite a large area, and I get proper fast Ethernet sockets, so I can plug desktop computers in as well as, you know, having mobile devices. And so far, it's working really, really well. You know, I've
and the point of this being, just to stress then, for people who haven't got a good broadband supplier, they can't get it in their place, they haven't got full fibre, they haven't. I recently did this for somebody who couldn't get any sort of broadband, but amazingly, it did work through a mobile signal, sticking the SIM card in a router. But I guess in the end, it's all dependent on whether you've got a good mobile signal indoors where you live.
Well, yes, but that's the whole point. To me, I've always thought that I had appalling signal in this place. Everyone always has problems in my home with getting a good signal. But what I've learned is that it's not as simple as that. That if you experiment with the areas, it may be in a particular window facing a different direction. As I said, I went from 20 to over 200. Speed with the same SIM card and the same network that I've been cursing about under my breath for years. So and the reason why we may want to do it is it may be you permanently can't get land-based internet. It may be that you're waiting for them to provide full fibre, which is the super fast broadband in your area, and you don't want to sign up for a two-year contract and then be trapped with a slower system. It may be that you're just staying somewhere temporarily. I mean, you can do this as a portable solution. If you're anything from an Airbnb to a villa, yeah, you can kit it out. And What really struck me was how well it can work, you know. And I might rue the day I say this to you, because I'm talking to you on this now.
I felt the same way. I was really surprised that it worked pretty well. In fact, so well that I was thinking, well, maybe I'll just dump my really good broadband, because this is a lot cheaper as well. I was
yeah,
I mean, it was unlimited number of gigabytes for about £20. That's pretty cheap for us.
That's pretty good. What you have to watch for is the fair use policies, because unlimited is never really fully unlimited, and I may hit the fair use limits because I've got cameras that stream 24/7 and a good number of them as well, so they'll take up about 2 terabytes of data over a period of a month just on their own, you know,
yeah, there probably won't be fair use.
No, they'll probably cap it about 600, but I'll find a way around that. But as I say, the other thing is that you get a 14-day remorse period usually. I mean, check your specifics, but certainly if you order it online and wait for them to send you the SIM. But I actually, you know, popped down to a mobile phone shop today and went and, you know, got it and got it activated and up and running for this, actually. So
you're speaking on it now?
I am. We're speaking on it now.
It works. And there you are.
I think it's solid at the moment. As I say, I may eat my words in a moment when it falls over, but it seems to me to be as good as it usually has been.
Fevzi, thank you. Fevzi Tokarp there from GadgetDetective.com.